Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. When do you plan to retire, and how confident are you that you can swing it financially? Our fantasies of living, traveling, and enjoying ourselves for a decade or two after we've finished our careers can be a source of great comfort when we're having a tough day at the office. But it turns out those daydreams are getting harder and harder to realize. And as my guest today has discovered, the problem of saving enough is not limited to those only with meager incomes during their working years. Martin Smith is a frontline correspondent and writer for the PBS series. The documentary The Retirement Gamble airs tonight on KERA Channel 13 television in North Texas. Martin, welcome back to Think.
Thank you for having me.
So you're candid in the piece about the fact that this is not simply a work experience for you. This is not an academic exercise. You, in fact, are in your mid-60s and don't feel financially ready to retire. Can you talk about how you came to that realization?
Well, it's through the process of putting this program together. I've always been aware of the need to save, and I did start saving in my 20s, but along the way, a divorce and putting my kids through college set me back a pace. And by doing this program and really focusing on it, I've been a financial reporter. I know about these issues, but when I really looked at my own situation, it was a little grimmer than I had thought. I met with a financial advisor. He didn't tell me too much that I didn't already know. I'm basically looking at a situation where I'm going to have to work well into my 70s. And even then, not knowing how long I'm going to live, not knowing what my health care costs might be, not knowing how the market will perform, you juggle all these variables. It's hard to really do any real planning. I don't know. But I'll work as long as I can, I think, is what it comes down to.
Well, and, you talk also about using multiple, there are those online calculators to let you know how you're doing, and some are more optimistic than others. And I've done the same thing. And what always strikes me is that there's nowhere in the calculator where you can say, what if I were out of work for 18 months? What if, my spouse had a major illness? What if something happened that right now just are not accounted for by those very convenient, clean little calculators?
Yeah, I had the same problem. They're crude instruments, really. And some of them seem to be very sophisticated, and you can get a printout of, 15 to 20 pages of all sorts of graphs and what they call Monte Carlo simulations. It's all very sophisticated, but you're absolutely right. When it comes to these sort of events that are common to all of us that might set us back, there's no place to put that stuff into your calculator. So you get different responses on different calculators, and I'm not even sure why sometimes. Your best, the best advice is probably listen to the more pessimistic one, just so you're ready. But it's most people, I think it's a half of all Americans say in polls that they don't think they have the ability to put aside enough money. So how are they gonna make it? It's a conundrum.
I saw a tweet yesterday from a Gen X professional who says, it occurs to me I know the number of years before the sun explodes, but not my monthly 401k contribution. And it does seem a lot of people find it confusing or off-putting to really deeply engage with this thing that we know is important but is upsetting sometimes.
It's upsetting. It's full of obtuse kind of language when you dive into your 401k. Most people who remember their first 401k orientation meeting at work were pretty dumbfounded by it. They ask questions, but then they have more questions and nobody's around to answer them. Most people work for small businesses, really, where there isn't even somebody there who can answer most of the questions. So somebody put it very well by saying, we used to have a pension plan that kind of set you up for life with a good portion of your salary for as long as you lived, provided by your employer. But somewhere along the way, that was discarded for a number of reasons. And now we've been sort of thrown out there on our own. It's as if we are given the keys to the car without any lessons of how to drive, and we're on a very slippery, treacherous highway. really, we're on our own is really one of the big messages that, you know, we're trying to hammer home in this program tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, it's worth noting here, Martin, that the 401k system, which has become standard at many American companies, it is the only retirement option offered to many American workers, was never designed to be the mainstay of retirement income.
Yeah, you know, one of the first things I wanted to know is, what is this 401k? What does this refer to? It refers to a section, a 401 of the Internal Revenue Service Tax Code, paragraph K, and it was initially there so that the executives could find a way of saving tax sheltered. It was never intended to be our retirement system for the masses. It's come to that, but it's kind of as an afterthought, as the old-style defined benefit pension plans were tossed aside. The only option for people was either these 401k plans or individual retirement accounts or IRAs. But nobody's really sat down and planned a retirement system where the math really adds up.
And so now 60 million of us are enrolled in these programs, but they are not created equal. Can you talk about how the personal finance industry has really grown up around this new way of saving for long-term goals?
Well, as these 401k plans came into being and more companies adopted them, the mutual fund industry, the financial services industry, saw this as a terrific opportunity. Here was money that was going to be pouring into these accounts. And they could manage this money, and they could charge commissions, and they could charge fees. So the big mutual fund companies like Fidelity got busy offering to be record keepers or offer a menu of funds into a 401k. And most people who have a 401k are familiar that there is a kind of menu, and it might have 20 or more funds on it from which you can choose to have your deductions deposited into. Some of these funds are very expensive, but you're not really aware of that unless you've really delved into the fine print or understand how to read your statement or your plan documents. So the funds can vary tremendously. A lot of 401k plans are not very good. They have very bad fund choices. Some are, you know, relatively good, but you can live next door to somebody, and they can have a very good plan, and you have a bad plan. You could have the same income and the same retirement needs, you know, by luck of draw where you work, you're at a disadvantage.
So I guess the idea is we're paying these fees because these things are actively managed by professionals who ostensibly know far better than you and I do, Martin, how to get the greatest returns. What do we know about the realities there?
Well, the reality is, I mean, that's what the pitch is. And they often advertise their hot funds, the mutual fund companies do. And some of these hot funds might show up. Often they're renamed, so it's even hard to know. But they show up in your 401k plan. But these active managers, while they may get hot for a couple of years or more, they don't stay hot over the long term. Over the long term, you're better off not really investing in these kinds of actively managed funds, because even the best money managers, the records show, the research shows, can't beat the market over the long term, that you're better off investing in something called an index fund, which simply tracks a major market index. The active manager, although he's well paid and he's supposed to be able to time the market and he's supposed to be able to recognize, you know, what sectors of the economy are hot and which are not, the record shows that most of those people can't keep it up for very long.
But the good news for them is that they get paid regardless, whereas we might lose money in our investments.
Well, it's a very good business, right? They're paid because they're managing the money and they charge fees. They charge all sorts of fees. Even the advertising that you see on television and on the radio is paid for by the fees that are deducted from your account. There's all sorts of fees. Somebody once did a study that in some of these funds and 401k plans, there's as many as 17 different kinds of fees. And some of these are relatively hidden, but they all subtract from what you would make if you weren't paying these fees. So it's it behooves all of us to know something about what fees we're paying and what the consequences of them are, because it's not intuitively obvious when you're paying these fees that they're really going to have a major consequence for your savings.
Well, you go through an exercise in the piece where you imagine that someone is earning a 7% return on average over the years, and there's a 2% management fee attached to that fund. Talk about the lifelong consequence of that.
Yeah, the mutual fund companies are sly. They don't even tell you you're making that 7%. What they tell you is that you're in a fund that's and it's costing you 2%, let's say. The gross on that fund to them is 7%. What you're getting is 5%. Well, the difference in what you are making and what that 7% versus the 5% is over 50 years, it adds up when you compound all those costs, is 63% difference. So you're losing 63% of what you would have had. So intuitively, we all think, well, I'm paying 2%, but I'm still making my 5%. That's great. You're really better off if you're in a much cheaper fund. The average family, according to another study that's been done, is giving up about $155,000 to the financial services industry in fees over, I think in that study, it's a 40-year investing lifetime.
So, which, you know, in parts of Texas, that'll buy a house, $155,000.
You know, and it'll keep you going for another year and a half or more. Or it'll give you a little extra money that you could pass to your heirs. It's a huge difference. And the index funds, which I mentioned, and we can talk about those, they charge fees that are 10 times less in some cases than these actively managed funds.
And that's because they're sort of set up and left to run on their own. They're not trading in and out and moving around their holdings within those funds.
That's exactly right. They can be run really by a computer or a robot because all they're doing is tracking a major market index. So if there's 500 stocks in the S&P 500, that fund simply represents the return in capital gains and in dividends of those 500 stocks, and there's no trading in and out, there's no timing of, you know, this sector versus that sector, there's no active management. So they charge a lot less. They don't charge any advertising fees either, and that's often why you don't know about them, because they don't show up, they're not advertised. And in some 401k plans don't even have that option, even though that's the better option on average for almost every investor.
Martin Smith is a correspondent and writer for the PBS series Frontline. The documentary The Retirement Gamble airs tonight on PBS stations across the country, including KERA Channel 13 television in North Texas. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call in now to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where you can design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, global studies, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Martin Smith. He's a correspondent and writer for the PBS series Frontline. His documentary, The Retirement Gamble, airs tonight at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television in North Texas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Okay, Martin, so we understand that index funds very often charge vastly lower fees than actively managed funds, and that those fees can add up over time, certainly. But talk about the returns. Are we not getting better returns when we have an actively managed fund than sort of just letting the market go on its own?
Yeah, well, you would think that you would get a better return if you have one of these hot fund managers paying attention to your mutual fund all the time, but the truth is you don't. Over time, you know, there's been various ways that people have sliced and diced the data, and it shows that over time in bull and bear markets, the index funds perform better than the actively managed funds. It's really just as simple as it's almost impossible to time the market. And, you know, you wonder why we have such a vast amount of what some people call financial pornography on television all the time. But it's because it's exciting. We like to think that we can beat the system and that we can, you know, put our bet on the winning horse, in this case, the winning fund. But on average, over time, you know, whether it's bond funds or stock funds, commodity index funds, they do better by simply tracking the broad market of whatever, you know, whatever market you're talking about, than those that pick and choose individual equities or whatever it might be.
What did you learn about the holdings that active fund managers actually have in their personal portfolios?
Well, in a conversation with Jason Zweig of the Wall Street Journal, he lets go this idea that when he talks, you know, he writes a column, The Intelligent Investor, for the Wall Street Journal. He's very tied into the financial services industry. He says, look, when you talk to these guys that run these actively managed funds, the sort of dirty little secret out there is that they own index funds in their own accounts. He says, they won't really tell you this. And he pauses and he says, unless you get a couple of beers in them.
And when you actually approached finance industry professionals, they told you they had never looked at the comparisons between actively managed funds and index funds and never seen evidence that index funds do better. And Helene Olin, who we actually had on the show a couple of months ago talking about her book Pound Foolish, tells you on camera that she finds this unbelievable. And she's not speaking metaphorically here. She means she thinks they're lying.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, I don't understand why the president of retirement at Prudential, a major insurance company, would not have noticed the plethora of, I mean, all these articles that are out there that say exactly that, that the index funds beat the actively managed funds. She claimed that she wasn't aware of that. I find that, as did Helene Olin,
yeah,
is just unbelievable.
Well, the reality is, if it is true, it's almost worse because then it's gross negligence, right? If they really have no idea that there are better returns out there other than their products, that's even more frightening than them lying.
Yeah, well, I mean, but what you have to understand, of course, is that they make their money by offering these products that charge higher fees. Mm-hmm. And the financial planners or brokers who sell these funds to individuals make better commissions. It's just the business model. And it's fine if you want to set up a brokerage account, it seems to me, and gamble your money in the market. But when it comes to retirement, you only get, you know, one run at your retirement. When you get to the age that you think you might want to retire, if you don't have the money, you can't go back and do your savings lifetime over again.
Mm-hmm.
So you only get one run. The fact is that these companies really, I think, when it comes to retirement savings advice, really ought to rethink the kind of consequences for ordinary people out there.
And here's the other rub is that in a country where the pension system, private pension system, has all but evaporated, people don't have a choice but to engage in the stock and bond markets, right? There's no one's going to make enough money with a simple savings account who has a middle class income to retire for even a decade.
Yeah, that's what's so frustrating about all of this. At the end of the day, it's good to know some of the pitfalls and know some of the better choices that you might make. But you really have to take some kind of risk. If you put your money in the mattress, of course, it will lose value because of inflation. If you invest in a very, very safe, inflation-protected bonds, let's say, you're probably not going to make a sufficient return unless you can afford to save a very huge percentage of your monthly salary. So that pushes you to take some kind of risk. That's why we call this the retirement gamble, because it really is. We profile a number of people who were hoping to retire early, and then they ran into the crashes of 2000 with the tech bubble and the real estate bubble of 2008. And that just set them back so far that they don't imagine that they'll ever stop working.
Yeah, it was really heartbreaking. You have one couple, they were both teachers, and at the height of the tech bubble in 1999, they looked at their statement and realized they had saved or had in the market over $1 million, and then it all sort of came tumbling down.
Yeah, they had suddenly $460,000. Other people have, another person in the program, Debbie Skazinski, not only lost half of her savings, she lost her job. And she, in her house, the value of her house declined to less than what she owed the bank.
Mm-hmm. And she was, like many Americans, doing what she was told to do. She was putting a lot of money away, investing for her future, and believed she had absolutely nothing to worry about.
Yeah, the problem is when you're doing what you think you're supposed to do, people are often listening to the wrong advice. And one of the things that was driven home to me in making this program is how many of the people who hang a shingle that says they're a financial advisor or a financial planner really don't have your back. They're really on the other side of the table. They're not looking out for your best interests.
And the reality of looking out for your best interest, the only people that you can absolutely count on to do that are those who are fiduciaries. Is that right?
That's right. A fiduciary is somebody who has a legal responsibility to look at your accounts and only give you advice that's in your best interest. The vast majority of advisors or planners or whatever they might be called are not fiduciaries. They're really brokers, and they operate under something called the suitability standard, which just says that if you come in and you ask me to recommend a bond fund, I only have to recommend a bond fund. I might recommend a bond fund that's expensive, that makes me a bigger commission, but I'm not under any obligation to recommend to you, well, you should buy this bond index fund that's much cheaper and will probably outperform the one that I'm recommending. It's not a very high standard, and the government is trying to get on this, and they're facing a fierce pushback from the financial services industry and their lobby in Washington.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're speaking this hour with Frontline correspondent Martin Smith. The documentary, The Retirement Gamble, airs tonight on KERA Channel 13. Let's go on the phone now to Devin in Dallas. Hi, Devin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to briefly say that there's a website called FINRA.org that you can actually use online, free online calculators, and it'll show you how much of a cut the financial services industry takes for mutual funds, and you can enter any mutual fund in your retirement account. I found that very useful before I moved all my accounts to a no-load fund.
Oh, that's good to know. And tell me, it's a little hard to hear you. Will you spell out the name of the website?
Sure. It's called FINRA, FINRA.org.
FINRA.org.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your call, Devin. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
So, your caller is referring to the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which is a kind of industry-financed service. But he's absolutely right. I mean, you want to be in no-load funds. You want to be in cheaper funds. It's a good tool to know about.
And I want to make this clear, Martin. So we might think, well, my statement doesn't say that I'm losing this amount of money per year. There aren't two columns when we each receive our annual statements, right? All that math, all that subtraction has already been done for us, so it doesn't necessarily feel like we're losing money.
That's right, because they're not telling you what the gross return of the fund you're in is. They're telling you the net. But if you look, you can find out what the it's called the exp ratio or expense ratio, and that's where the fees are expressed in a percentage, and that will tell you basically what you're paying to the 401k plan or the mutual fund company, and it will alert you if you're paying, you know, over 1.3% annually, you're paying above average costs. An index fund will cost you anywhere in the 0.15 to 0.25, 0.3.
Comparison. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Lane in Arlington. Hi, Lane.
Hi, Chris. I wanted to thank you, Martin and Chris, for reporting on this. I've watched a lot of those frontline specials on Wall Street, Funding Power. They're all real good stuff. My question was about, you mentioned it earlier about the fiduciary responsibility. Is there nothing in Dodd-Frank or nothing that's on the books or in the works at all to try to make this a moral, give it a fix or anything? It just seems like it's pretty obviously a huge conflict of interest.
Well, thanks for your call. This actually comes up in tonight's documentary. Tell us about
great.
That.
Yeah, this is a good question. It's a question all of us should be asking and paying attention to. The government, the Labor Department, is responsible for employee retirement account regulation, and they put forward a fiduciary rule proposal, and they were inundated with responses from the financial services industry protesting it, saying it would cost too much. They'd have to either get into a new line of business or they'd have to charge off the cost of this to the consumer. So they pushed back. The Labor Department, the Obama administration, pulled the proposal. They say they're going to come back with a new one in July, sometime this summer. So we'll see what happens. But yes, right now, it's about 85% of all the financial planners are not fiduciaries. The 15% that are go under they're tested and certified, and they are called RIAs for Registered Investment Advisors. Those people work for a flat fee, not on a commission basis. But when it comes to retirement accounts, the person who's at this point who calls themselves a planner or advisor is not generally an RIA.
Which is not to say, we want to be careful here, which is not to say that everyone is out to do you harm and that you might in fact benefit, but there's no guarantee under the law that that your best interest will be served.
Chris, that's a very good point. And in fact, there's an incentive for them to have your account grow, and they will point this out. Because they're charging you an asset management fee, or that expense ratio is based on your assets under management. So if your account shrinks, they're getting a smaller take. So they obviously want your account to grow. They want the pool of money that they're charging to get bigger, generally. But they also have other conflicts, which is to sell you one that gets them a better commission at sale, or that pays a higher expense ratio. Back in the 80s and 90s, when we all got into this, when the pensions disappeared, you know, everybody was making money hand over fist. They were opening their statements every month, and they were seeing gains, and they didn't really care about the fees that they were paying. And at that point, the industry was charging higher fees than they are today. They've come down somewhat. Now we've had, I don't know, 13 years of pretty flat markets, so fees matter more, and people are feeling it more. And so There's real turmoil in the industry and in government over how to make the system work a little better.
It's funny that we could be so short-sighted as a society, because certainly we understand that markets go up and markets go down, and sometimes those are prolonged cycles in which things are not going well. It's funny that we were lulled into this sense that the market was going to be up and stay up for the foreseeable future and didn't consider that things could go differently at exactly the same time that companies were convincing us that we didn't need pensions, that we were better off this way.
You know, this is a whole area of human psychology that we touch on this. in the program. But this is a fascinating area of just how people like good news and don't like bad news, and they just, when things are going well, they don't want to think about stress testing their retirement plan. They don't want to think about, well, what happens if the market goes down by half and I have to retire at that point? It's just not in our human nature to worry about these things when things are going well.
I have an email here from George who says, could you comment on employees' ability to tap into 401k accounts prior to retirement with a penalty versus not being able to access funds earmarked for them through a company pension? In other words, writes George, could there be a system designed to save us from ourselves whereby we would have no access to our contributions until retirement?
You know, I got into a 401k plan because I was the 529 plans that I had deposited money into for my to help me pay for my kids' educations were depleted and by the 2008 crash, and I went from an IRA into a 401k so that I could borrow money from my 401k. In retrospect, it was a mistake. I would have been better off had I had my kids take out student loans. I could have paid those loans for them or whatever, but I think that the email from the listener is right on, that we have to prevent people from being able to dip into these things because people don't seem to understand the long-term consequences of dipping into your 401k. You lose the opportunity for that money to grow at a quicker rate. It is a problem. You know that President Bush at one point proposed that we all have access to our own that Social Security be turned over to individuals and that we could borrow from it, we could take it out. It would have been a disaster.
Martin Smith is with us. He's correspondent and writer for the PBS series Frontline, whose documentary The Retirement Gamble will air tonight on PBS stations across the country, including KERA Channel 13 television here in North Texas at 9 o'clock. You can join our conversation now by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where you can design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, global studies, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Martin Smith. He's a correspondent and writer for PBS's Frontline. There will be a Frontline documentary airing tonight at 9 on KERA Channel 13 television called The Retirement Gamble. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. You know, Martin, when you talk about dipping into your 401k to help pay for your children's education, many people have been in similar circumstances, or they've lost a job, or they've had a medical crisis. It is a factor of our culture, it seems, to be sort of ashamed to ask for help, and to, before, you know, the first thing we do is dip into our own savings rather than turning to any other strategies, because that's how we feel a good American should behave.
Self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's actually very... that's right on. I think I felt like, oh, I can do this. I can take care of this. I don't have to apply for a loan. And it seemed like the right idea, but I was borrowing from my 401k and not really helping myself in the long run.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak on the phone next with Darcy in Dallas. Hi, Darcy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask your guest today, me and my husband were in our 40s. I'm 40, he's 44, and I've already cashed in a 401k in my 20s, and neither of our companies currently offer a 401k program. We have no savings. Where do we start for retirement at this point? what would be a, where would be a good place to start?
Let me jump in and remind you, Darcy, that Martin is a journalist and not a financial advisor and not a fiduciary. But, Martin, perhaps you have some ideas of where Darcy might look.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Chris, because I was going to say the same thing. I don't hold myself out as an expert on this, other than as a journalist who knows some of the ins and outs of the issues. But I think what you want to seek out, if you can afford it, is to find a financial advisor who might give you some good advice. And I'd look for a registered investment advisor who doesn't charge any commissions on recommending certain products that you should buy, but somebody who charges you a flat fee or perhaps an hourly rate, even better. Your options are that you can look into setting up individual retirement accounts, but you can't really put away that much money. At your age, you can put away, each of you, $5,000 a year. And there are other options. They're more complicated. I would not be the person to ask about them. I think you should really seek out good advice from somebody that you know is a fiduciary. In other words, somebody you know has your best interests at heart.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Sam on the line in Dallas. Hi, Sam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You guys were talking earlier about how it's either negligence or deceit that insurance companies would choose managed funds over non-managed funds that have been shown by some outside analysis to have stronger returns. What role does control over the basket of investments play in that decision-making process? I think it's more complicated than the way it's being portrayed. Thanks.
What I think you're asking is, what's the why are some funds showing up in your 401k menu and other funds are not? And that has to do with, and we report on this in the program, there's a kind of pay-to-play arrangement between the mutual fund companies and the 401k plan providers, whereby if you want to be in my 401k plan at my company, if you want your funds to be represented there, you have to pay a little bit, just as a record producer might pay to get his artist on a radio station, payola, they called it. And there's nothing illegal about this. It's simply the way the industry works, but that determines in many cases, how it is that those funds show up in your 401k plan.
We have an email from Manuel who asks how to find a financial advisor with fiduciary responsibility.
Well, I think you can look around your community and see who's advertising, and then when you meet with them, ask them if they are fiduciaries. Ask them if they're willing to take a fiduciary pledge. Ask them if they're a registered investment advisor. I'm sure there are tools. I know that the Frontline website that accompanies the show will have a number of suggestions and tools such as this. And so if you go to www.frontline.org after the program airs tonight, there will be a number of different offerings there to help address that kind of question.
Back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. Let's go this time to Frankie in Fort Worth. Hi, Frankie.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I realize all financial advisors are not created equal. I've been a financial advisor for 34 years with a national warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that this has been kind of a one-sided conversation because, I look for products that have lower fees. I tell my client, would you rather do this product or that product? But, financial advisors can't work for free. And I think that is the insinuation there, and I don't think that's fair.
Thanks for a call. I don't know, Martin, that you were trying to say that financial advisors should work for free, but maybe you can respond to that.
No, I'm glad that she called in, and I think that's a fair point. Nobody expects a mutual fund manager to work for free. Nobody expects a financial advisor to work for free. The question is whether or not the question is how they're paid. Do they have an incentive to provide you the best advice for you, or are there incentives in the way that they're paid such as commissions on sales, that might tend to conflict with your best interests. And I certainly want to emphasize that there are financial planners who are not registered investment advisors who are probably conscientious, moral, and doing as good a job as they can for their clients. But when you are asking whether or not the individual customer or client wants some assurance that they have a legal recourse or that there is a legal obligation on the part of their advisor to give them the best advice, that's why we have registered investment advisors. It ensures that that person is indeed a fiduciary.
Were you surprised when you were speaking to the people that you profile how the amount that people end up invested or having invested and waiting for them at retirement, their income is not necessarily directly in correlation to how much they're able to put away or they're able to earn on their investments?
Well, that's because of the differences in the various plans.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, what funds they've chosen and what their own discipline has been in terms of how much of their income they're putting away. I mean, it is the rule of thumb that's out there right now is that you need 15 times your current salary in order to ensure a safe retirement. Now, that means if you're making $100,000 a year, you need $1.5 million in the bank. Of course, that's a gamble, too. You don't know how long you're going to live or what might happen to you, but the difference in one person and another and the kind of returns they get varies because of those factors, how much you're putting away, what kind of returns you're getting. It's a bit of a crapshoot.
And, of course, if you need 15 times your annual salary, it may not be possible to do that in a career that people, you know, finishing sort of graduate school in their mid to late 20s probably can't expect to retire in their early 60s.
Well, that's right. And that's what makes this whole system sort of not a system at all. You know, Social Security won't get us there. There's not enough money coming to us in Social Security. That's a supplement. The 401k plan, especially if you've dipped into it or haven't always worked for a company with a 401k, you can't count on that to make up the difference. So what are you supposed to do? Many people simply don't make enough money to meet the ends, to put their kids through school or pay for emergency of one kind or another. So it's, as we say, a gamble. Now, people shouldn't be entirely discouraged. There are things you can do to better your situation, and that's what we hope people can take away from the program tonight. We make the program, too, I wanted to point out, it's not for 50- and 60-year-olds only. It's for people like some of your callers, I think, who are younger. I think as soon as you hit your 20s and you're in the workforce, you have to start thinking about these things. As, you know, wonky and nerdy as that sounds, and as, against all our instincts, we, after all, live in a consumer society, and we're implored to buy this and buy that. It behooves us all to think about saving early on and be consistent about it.
Back to the phones now. This time, let's speak with Dave in Dallas. Hey, Dave.
Hi. Thanks, Chris. Martin, I've been listening to your program. My question is, what is your feeling about the Dogs of the Dow approach in terms of trying to stay current with the market and return on investment?
Well, before Chris jumps in and points out, I'm not a registered investment advisor or a fiduciary, and I don't want to be here giving that kind of financial advice. I don't want to dodge your question, but it's a kind of, you know, the caller's talking about a strategy of buying the dogs, buying what's been down, because eventually they do come back up. It's an approach. I tend to be myself doubtful that I can really identify even the dogs consistently that are about to come back and think that an index strategy is probably safer for most. I think it's safe to say safer for most investors.
What kind of investment in time and effort does it take for individuals to fully understand what they're paying, what they're getting, what the risks are? Is this something that we, you know, sort of need a master course in, or can we spend a few hours a week over the course of a few months and get a handle on all of this?
I think there's a lot of good financial advice out there. I think the problem is that there's so much bad noise out there that sorting out just the key things that you need to know from all the other information that's coming at you all the time is a very difficult thing to do. But I think there are a number of good financial columnists for major newspapers. If you read them consistently over time, they will continually return to the salient themes that you need to pay attention to. I mean, some things have been drilled into us. Diversification, for instance. We've gone through some market cycles recently, and people have seen the consequences of volatility. So we've learned that we need to diversify, that as we get older, we shouldn't be all in equities. These things get across to people, but I don't know that there's some... I mean, what we've tried to do in the program is show you some of the big risks and make it simple, not load you up with too much information, and give you some information that arms you against some of the bad sort of pitches that you might be getting over the media.
Of course, it is always so comforting to find one guru, right, who says, I have all the answers, just ignore everyone else. But life is never that simple.
Unfortunately, if that were the case, I mean, if we'd all known that Warren Buffett was going to be, you know, the star that he became, great, but who knew that when? And time and time again, what happens is that people do find a hot stock picker running a hot fund, or, you know, in a small town has an investment advisor who's really, you know, giving hot stock tips all the time. But that person doesn't persist, and the likelihood is that you're going to get in too late, just before things go down. So beware of that. Better to take more conservative, simpler advice, I think.
Looking yourself at working at least into your mid-70s, is it comforting at all to know there are lots of other people in your generation who will be doing the same thing?
That I won't be alone on the
yeah,
street?
Yeah, I mean, maybe none of us will be alone as we work, you know, longer and longer into our lives.
Yeah, I don't know that I take much comfort from knowing that a lot of other people might suffer just like me. I mean, I'm relatively well off in that I have a good job, and I'm healthy enough, and it doesn't seem impossible to me to work well into my 70s, but that's not the case for everybody. I don't take any comfort that other people are suffering. I think we are facing a serious crisis, and that it's going to have, you know, unforeseen consequences. If older people aren't going to get out of their jobs, how are younger people going to get their jobs? I think there's unforeseen consequences that I don't even know.
Martin Smith is a correspondent and writer for the PBS series Frontline, which will air the documentary The Retirement Gamble tonight. That'll be on at 9 o'clock on KERA Channel 13 television. Martin, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Chris, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can download the podcast free at kera.org/think and send your comments, questions, and suggestions via email to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.